the idea is then a lot of the restaurants are now doing a lot of takeout, and so they're using one like single use containers now that they cannot use dishes because of COVID-19. Their trash cans are becoming more full. Some of their, I'm trying to figure out if their contracts with their privately owned dumpsters have been impacted. But this is obviously inundated city owned trash cans, so we're looking at what's going on there. Just wanted to alert you in case you've seen some of that. Feel free to reach out to me. We are in touch with the mayor's office and trying to figure out how we can get that cleaned up. It looks like it comes in spikes, but just wanted to put that out there that we are working on that. Next week, we'll have our final budget approval, it sounds like. We're still looking through what the nuances and details will be of that. It's coming fast, but we still do have our individual budget feedback form on the council members' website. You can find it on Council Member Campbell's website if you have any additional points of emphasis you'd like us to share. We've already put out our budget memo to the IBA. They'll be reviewing it and putting out a report on that, I think, this week. After we approve the budget, there will be items in there that we'll be looking at, including the Rental Assistance Fund and the Small Business Relief Fund that have gotten a lot of attention. And there's still the issue of CARES Act, federal CARES Act funding, and how the city will utilize each dollar of that. So feel free to get in touch with me if you have questions about it, or if you'd like to provide input on where you think some of those funds could go. We're happy to take that input. Another thing is the temporary outdoor dining proposal. The city this month, I think later this, will be looking at an ordinance to allow for businesses to expand their footprints a little bit and allow for privately owned property to be adjusted to accommodate larger business settings, whether that's outdoor benches. But this is an effort to create more space for people to allow for that social distancing while businesses start to reopen. That's something the council will see later this month.
But you don't have a date?
I believe the 20th, but we're still waiting on confirmation. There's a lot happening this month, but it does look like it will be something that the council gets to see. It's something that businesses have been asking for, and we'd like to get more details on it. It's kind of in motion, but it looks like that's something that will help businesses as they reopen. The last thing I'll mention, and I know it's part of your agenda, so I won't take too much time on it, is the complete communities issue. I know it's important for this board, and I've been talking with lots of folks this week just to try to get up to speed on where that conversation is and how we can be helpful. Obviously not before the council yet, but just wanted to at least put it out there that we're watching that conversation. We know that it will have a lot of details and nuances to it. We've been following the conversation to take any of that input that you have and provide it to Council Member Campbell. She'll be receiving a briefing from city staff on this week, and so we'll be able to get a little bit more detail on what it looks like. In my initial research, it's very broad, and I still have a lot more questions on some of the details and how it will actually look. But it's moving, and there is a lot to it. So I'm happy to take any input, try to answer any questions. I'm not an expert on the issue, but it is something that we're watching in terms of housing and how the city will encourage development that benefits all communities in San Diego going forward. So I just wanted to note that. Other than that, it's here to answer any questions in the meantime. I know that this planning board always asks about SDRs. That is somewhat related to discussion on communities, but I do make a distinction there that, sorry, communities.
Teddy, you still there?
Yeah, I was just getting some feedback. I just wanted to make the distinction for the group that the STVR conversation is still happening, and I don't want to get it too entangled in the complete communities discussion, but our office is still looking at that as an issue, and obviously whether the city will start to enforce the ban, and if not, what the regulations will end up looking like. So that's pretty much what I wanted to discuss and address with you all. If you have questions, I'll be here to answer them, and yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Teddy? Okay, let's move right along. Miller, are you here?
Yes, I am using a new headset. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're good.
Awesome. Hey everyone, Miller with Center Prison Pro Tem, Tony Atkins office. First, want to talk about the budget. An agreement was just reached today between the Senate and the Assembly on the proposed state budget. It builds on the governor's framework to protect jobs and preserve vital services, while also recognizing the quite sober economic outlook facing California, a $54 billion deficit. The senator put out a statement, excerpt of it, which is, our economy has been pummeled by COVID-19. I think through a decade of pragmatic budgeting, we can avoid the coming cuts to education and critical programs or broad middle-class tax increases. The budget includes a proposal to have an opt-in program where the state works with landlords and tenants to have tenants pay back rent and avoid evictions for those affected by COVID-19. We've been getting a few calls about that, so we like to emphasize it's an opt-in program. It's not something landlords have to do. And the budget has to be passed by both houses on June 15. Of course, there's a lot more in the budget that we could talk about, but in interest of time, I will move on, but feel free to reach out with any questions. Regarding the protest, the senator put out a statement saying all those protesting, she hears them and she's with them, and if those are that are to incite damage and violence, that they're we're on to you and you will not succeed in tearing us apart. And I very much like how she put that. Basically, she believes in de-escalation, demilitarization, and more outreach and community policing. Regarding the housing production package, several senators have released the housing production package. It's the result of 4 months of work by a group of senators designated by Senator Atkins. It offers solutions for California's housing shortage to continue to move us forward in addressing our housing needs, and it ushers in some innovative solutions to release for some development by expediting unused land areas and advancing some small-scale infill development. And I'd be happy to provide more details on that, too. It's just,
do you have the bill numbers?
I do. I can get that up in just a second. A lot of tabs open. Here we go. So if you'd like, I'd be happy to list each bill and a sentence summary of each. I was not going to because of time, but it's up to you.
I think you can give us the numbers.
Okay. There's SB 902 by Wiener.
Mm-hmm.
SB 995 by Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
SB 1085 by Skinner. 1385 Caballero. 1120 Atkins. And yeah, that should be it. I can also send around some more information about all these.
Yeah, I can email that to me. I can send that out to everyone. Thank you, Miller.
Sure. And just the last thing is, as always, feel free to reach out for any state-related issue, especially unemployment. We're here to help.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Miller?
A quick one, Andrea, from Chris here. When you send out the list of these bills out, if we could see a note of any of that pertain to ADUs, I'd be interested to see what changes might be occurring or proposed for those.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, and I can tell you now 1120 by Senator Atkins has to do with ADUs.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone from the community?
I don't have a statement, but I would really like it if some of the people would mute their mics, because I'm recording this and I'm having a really tough time hearing some of the things over paper rustling and weird noises.
Miller's the only one. It's something in Miller's background noise.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
I don't think so. I was hearing it from someone else, but anything's
the only one unmuted besides me.
Weird. Well, maybe it's, I don't know. Well, Anyways.
LB, who knows?
All right. Thank you. Michaela?
Take care.
Hi, everybody. As, you know, Miller and Teddy have addressed, you know, the assembly member is also in solidarity with the peaceful protesters. Sacramento is a different scene, and he's been speaking with some of the protesters up there. You know, we're seeing a lot of individuals who haven't been public, you know, as civically engaged, starting to contact our office about police reform legislation. So I just wanted to kind of start off with that. The Assembly and the Senate have to had to reduce their bills because when the coronavirus, the stay-at-home isolation order, a lot of the members went back to their districts, and now the House of Origin deadline kind of makes the Assembly members and the senators quicken the type of legislation. So basically, we, you know, a lot of Assembly members and senators started with a larger bill package and have had to reduce it. So you'll see a lot of bills that are being addressed towards the coronavirus. But one of our bills is about the NAVWAR site in San Diego to help facilitate SANDAG more expeditiously with getting that site between the Navy and SANDAG. So that is a piece of legislation. It's AB 2731. And it is kind of changing per committee. It is heading its way to the Assembly floor, and then it'll go to the Senate. And then I just wanted to touch on the DMV. Right now, there are offices that are open. Well, actually, I think in San Diego they reopened, but because of the protests, they were closed this week. But last week, they opened more offices, so Claremont, Normal Street, San Ysidro, Chula Vista are open, and El Cajon as well. However, you do need an appointment in order to go to the office, and right now they're not accepting new appointments. So those who are being seen had an appointment, you know, before March. So for those whose license expires between March and July of this year, if you're over 70 years old, you do receive the 120-day extension. If you're under 70, your license will expire July 31st. And, you know, it has been fluid. If the DMV and the governor decide they need to extend it again, they will. I just don't want residents to go to the offices, you know, standing in line for 2 hours and not be able to get in. So that's just a heads up. Other than that, just like Miller, I'm available for any unemployment issues, any kind of state-related matters. Thank you.
Thanks. Is there any word on the real IDs? Have they delayed implementation of that at all due to COVID?
Yes, thanks for asking. So they did extend it to October 1st, 2021. So it was supposed to be October 1st, 2020. So it was delayed a year of implementation. And as soon as the DMV does start accepting appointments, if you're looking to get a real ID or if your license is expiring within the next year, I would go ahead and make that appointment because it's just going to be a really crazy rush once the home isolation order has been lifted.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Great, thank you. Does anyone have any other questions for Michaela?
This is George. I have a question. Michaela, thank you for your help earlier with, this is George McCall with the stuff you did for me. My driver's license runs out in September, and I went online and went through the paperwork and everything to set it up, and it was my understanding that I'll get an appointment by mail. Is that correct?
Yes, if the DMV did communicate to that to you, and you did do a good job by, you know, completing your application forms online, they will communicate with you your next steps. If, you know, within the next couple months you don't get anything, feel free to follow up with me, and I'll contact the legislative office.
Great, thank you.
So, yeah, just to add on to that, for everybody, you know, your neighbors, your friends, have everybody try to complete their DMV transactions online first, and then you might be able to complete it without having to go to the office at all. So,
great. All right. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to turn, I'm going to let Brian Widener go ahead and give us an update on trees that they'll be removing.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me. One of your members, Virginia Wilson's also on our Community Forestry Advisory Board, and I'm sure I've probably spoke to a few of you as well in the past. This is my first time using WebEx, so we'll see how it goes, but I think it's pretty similar to Microsoft Teams, and that's what we normally use. A lot of us use it in the city of San Diego. I have a small presentation, so I'm going to attempt to pull that up. Wish me luck. Okay. And everyone can hear me, correct?
Yep.
Good. So, again, I'm Brian Widener, San Diego City Forester. The program itself manages over 200,000 street trees, probably somewhere in the ballpark of 600,000 park trees. And then we also think that there may be a million or even more private property trees throughout the city, which the city of San Diego has almost no jurisdiction. Last time we checked, we had 13% tree canopy cover. We're talking about doing another LIDAR assessment this year or some other remote sensing to see where our canopy cover is, because we have a goal of reaching 15% by this calendar year, 2020. And then one thing I wanted to point out is that this is our 10th year as a Tree City USA, which is very exciting for us as a city as a whole. We're making a lot of progress here, getting the word out that trees are really essential to our communities, to our environment, and the program has slightly grown over the last couple of years too as well, so good news on that front. And then urban forestry involves multiple departments throughout the city, so I'm under transportation and stormwater department, which manages the street trees, parks and recreation manages park trees and open space trees, development services, permits for new trees, new tree plantings, or tree work as well if citizens decide they want to trim their own tree. And then there's other departments, economic development, public works, planning. We even occasionally reach out to libraries when they need tree work. And then we've got some outside partners, U.S. Forest Service, Cal Fire, Urban Forestry, I already mentioned the Community Forestry Advisory Board, and tried to partner with San Diego on tree planting projects, as well as Urban Core, and more recently, SDG. And then this is just trying to put some numbers together here quickly. This is citywide, and we only have, these are numbers from this fiscal year, so as you know, the city operates first June is their calendar. These numbers go all the way up to February. We're still working on much of the last months. But so far, to date, we've planted over 450 street trees, almost 900 park trees. Over 900 tree removals, 13,000 trim trees. And then about 3,900 tree meetings requested from the public for our street trees. I think on average we get somewhere in the ballpark of 9,000. And then just an update on urban forestry during this pandemic. There has been limitations on tree maintenance and tree planting. A hold was placed on tree planting, so we weren't able to plant as many trees as we wanted to this fiscal year. There is a hold on routine tree maintenance, so we have a contractor that normally does proactive pruning of our street trees. Most of that, I wouldn't say all of it, but probably 90-95% of that sometimes we have a, we still get emergency tree work situations, and probably on a weekly basis. Every once in a while, the tree falls, or it's locked right away. As we know, some of our parks remain closing. I just read the Balboa Park is opening up in some respects. But there's some, I know there's like a small parking park down the street from me, which is part of the school that's been closed since March. So pros and cons to that is that probably our trees aren't getting maintained as much. But for example, with the park down the street where I live, the Burke Park, those trees are probably breathing a sigh of relief as their appearance are getting trampled on their bones. And then one of the other unfortunate news for the Urban Forestry Program this year was the transportation program. It's supposed to be placed. Teddy already alluded to the topic I came here today to talk about. I'm putting this slide out here, the South American colony foreheads. We are, I wanted to let you guys know that we're aware that there are infected trees. I'm not exactly sure what many of them have been sending their contact. This evil infestation started kind of in the south part of the city, downtown. It's probably been in the OB district 2 of San Diego for 2 or 3 years, but it's kind of, exploded in the last year plus. Right now, the only thing that we're able to do is plant trees for safety, but to also hopefully try to prevent spreading.
Brian, you're cutting in and out a little bit. Can you get closer to your mic?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, tell me if you can't hear me. So, just to repeat here, we're aware of the South American palm weevil in our date palms, and that are recent, more of a recent problem in OB and Point Loma last year. It's kind of taken off applications. Best to do at this point in time is remove those trees for safety reasons and to also keep the spread of. People do have, there is the option to treat trees. We don't have that kind of capacity at the city level, but there have been a couple of cases throughout the city where residents are just considering banding together and some money together to treat those trees. I don't know all the details of it. I do know it's effective, but the downside is once you start treating these date palms, you probably have to treat them for many, many years. So I can talk to you more about that offline for questions.
There we go. Got it. Thank you.
Yes. So, the reason I came here tonight and thanks for having me is recently found two Tory pines in Saratoga Avenue, recently designated by the Pet Office in 2016. So mostly dead and now.
I can't hear you at all, Brian.
Anyone else can't hear me? Sorry about that.
That's better now.
Is that better? Okay. I'll see what I can do. The residents of the house here on the corner of Saratoga, and I don't know how you pronounce this street name, Proud, they make us aware of a dead, dying pine tree in March. We went out there at the end of March, took a look, and saw that there was two trees that were mostly dead, and now there have been a couple of violations of those. So this is our timeline for these trees' removals. multiple dilations already. These dead trees actually have noticeable insect damage to them. We don't know if that's a cause of why these trees died. I usually tell people trees sometimes decline quickly for multiple reasons, such as lack of water, could be the pest, some other disease. We're still looking into all of that. We're also partnering with SDG&E, one of these trees. So the plan is to remove these trees sometime in the next couple of weeks, and definitely before the end of June. Can be any other issues that you might find on the trees or things like that. And again, the reason is these trees are dead, so it becomes a safety reason. And the other thing that we're concerned about is that we're concerned about the pests that found, the pests that we found on these trees, possibly spreading to other tree lines, other landmark trees. And then the plan, too, is to replace both of those trees, depending on underground utilities, and there's like a stop sign that's pretty close to one of those trees, so we'll have to see if we can get trees back in there, and then someone also needs to create water with trees. We plan to reach out to them. And then I've got a couple more pictures here. I don't know how easy this will be for you to see, but if you mouse, right? There's a couple, you can see a couple exit holes here. And you can see grass coming out of the exit holes. That's when the beetle basically exited the tree and parked in the car for approximately 3 pounds. So these are pretty small. These were like almost like chop holes. Size. They're very small. Again, we don't know exactly what kind of insect this is. We're still looking into that. And then we also found this, which has been identified as a pine slayer. We think that this is a borer, but we don't think this was the cause of the pine slayer. We just think that this is the kind of insect that's hosting in this tree after the tree is removed.
Okay. Thank you. I think Tracy had a question for you, so I'm going to let Tracy go first, and then does anyone else have a question?
Hi, Brian. Thank you for the presentation and the information. There are a couple of extremely large, I think they're like the big king palms near the West Point Loma Bacon Cable area that are on private property. And they are extremely damaged, and they look like they're about ready to either catch fire or fall over. And I'm wondering, is the city going to reach out to them and ask them to remove the trees, or are you going to demand that they remove the trees because of the weevil? Or, I mean, how are you guys handling the ones on private property?
That's a good question. And I don't know if you can still see or hear me, but... we've tried to reach out to the county to see if they can help us for more private property owners in regards to their calls, but we haven't made a lot of traction on them. So I think at this point, if someone wants to make that complaint, I'll reconnect with you to figure out if there's exact locations. We'll try to get something out to those folks. I would be probably concerned about fire hazard or anything like that. Again, it would be really for safety, especially if the gate home is near their house, or if it's near a walkway where their kids and family are walking, etc. And then we want to try to keep these spread from the greater tree. But I mean, here's the big challenge is that we can notify folks and even tell them they have to do it, but I don't know how long. Really have teams to tell folks if they have to remove their trees, but look into that a little bit more. And then the other thing too is the cost. It's pretty pricey.
So the city would not pay for it if it's on private property, or? The
city would not pay for it.
Okay. That's the issue. So the one tree that I'm thinking of right now is actually, it borders Bobo's. So it's on private property, but it's right next to, I think it's right next to Bobo's. And, you know, so it's really, it's close to commercial property as well as private property. So it's concerning, but that's the one. So, yeah, anyways, no, okay.
It's challenging. Yeah, and they do have a code enforcement person with the Transportation and Stormwater Department that occasionally issues violations for vegetation that might be either encroaching in the right of way or possible theft in the right of way. So, again, we could look into it.
But if the tree is infested with bugs that are going to be spreading throughout the county or the city, then that seems to be a dire need to have the trees just disposed of. So write my council member?
Write your council member. Exactly. Okay. That's what I would say.
All right. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I think Kevin had a question.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin.
He's still muted.
Kevin. Okay. Well, I'll ask a question then. So you said you were looking out for pests or other, I guess, things living in the trees. So are you looking for any possible animals that are taking up residence in the tree before you cut them down and moving them?
Yeah, we will. There is, so SDG&E, I believe, is having a biologist go out there to look for pests. So we're aware of possible distant birds.
Okay.
Look at that. The challenge probably will be then, if we did find an SDG, what will we do next? I think my biggest concern really is just the insects right in the tree to tree. So is there a way we can take down one of the trees and the other, or take down most of the tree and put the nest? I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Kevin? Are you still there?
The main purpose of me coming here was just to notify everyone that we're going to take time to very soon, or we plan to at least. And then, I know people are concerned about the South Africa.
Okay.
So,
thank you. Does anyone else have any questions? I'm gonna put you in touch with Kevin so he can ask his through email. It doesn't sound like his mic is working at all.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. Anthony, I have one really quick question. I know that this free street tree program is on hold due to the virus pandemic thing, but it looks like it was delayed a bit, or at least it was bogged down a little bit before that. So do you know when that might start up again, and what would be the timeline for somebody that had, like, for example, I put my request in about a year ago, what do you anticipate a timeline would be to catch up?
Good question. So we do, at the moment, we do have a budget for next fiscal year to plant more trees. But again, the city budget things are much less. So it's hard for us to make any kind of guarantees on what we can do with tree planting and not. Number wise, we probably have a backlog of something like 1,800 trees, and typically only been able to plant about 600 per year. And I think folks have been waiting possibly a year and a half, possibly 2 years in some cases. So I will, I'll check back with you, Anthony.
Sure.
See where you're at.
Well, thank you. And really, is there any prohibition or any advice for somebody like for myself if I want to just buy my own tree and plant it in the right of way, you know, in between the curb and the sidewalk? Can I do that as long as I maintain it? And any troubles or like a list of tree species that you would request or require?
Yeah, there's we recommend a lot of different tree species, so that's not necessarily an issue. But it's a little bit varied on our website, but on sandiego.gov/trees. It's under the overview tab. There is a tree selection guide, and it's broken down by spacing of the parkway. And then you are required to get a permit to plant the tree. It's free. It comes from ESD. It's like a 2 or 3 page. It's pretty easy to fill out. But you're basically getting permission to plant the tree. And I believe DSC is still going out there and determining if there's spacing for the tree, if it shows the right kind of tree to plant, et cetera. But that's definitely a viable option. So it's just, you do have to get a permit, but it's free.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it.
Anthony, there's also a list of trees for our area in our community plan.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Yeah, saw that. Good. Thank you.
That up. Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. We are going to keep on going. Unless, Kevin, is your mic working? Do you have a question? Because we really need to get a move on.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Nope.
But not anymore. Okay.
I have a question. Street trees that are being removed for sidewalk repair. Some of the homeowners have been caught off guard by the sidewalk repair and removal. Are those
plates? How do the homeowners involved or information? So I sort of caught some of that, most of that, I would say. There is, Street Division is repairing sidewalks in Point Loma areas. I don't know about Ocean Beach. I believe they might be in there too as well. They are working hand in hand with us, but I think one of the issues is that they planned out some of these sidewalk repairs many months ago, like a year and a half, 2 years ago. So I know folks were notified that they may have a tree coming out for a sidewalk repair. What I can do is I can try to pick the brains of one of the engineers over at the Street Division to see if we can get to those locations for the sidewalks. I will give you an FYI here, too. There's a couple of locations, at least the Point Loma proper here, that we've been to try to figure out how we can save some of those larger trees in those neighborhoods. Try to redesign the sidewalks around things. So we've got some good stuff going on.
And I had one quick other question, if I can.
Sure, Kevin, but I mean, we really need to make it quick.
I'll shut up the rest of the meeting. The other question I had was we can just go ahead. Sorry, I don't want to.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Great. All right, so I'm going to start. So I have the presentation from the city about mobility choices and housing solutions. So I will run through that, try to answer any questions to the best of my ability. Like Teddy said, the city council will be reviewing this, and this goes hand in hand really with the housing element report that we looked at, I think, back in December. This is a roadmap to how we're going to get all of that housing and how we're going to share my screen and how we're going to get there. Okay. Is it, can everyone see it? Can everyone see the thing okay? Sorry, I can't hear any of you. Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so like I said, complete communities, mobility choices, and housing solutions. So the mobility choices in this as well, there was some state legislation that mandated we reduce our vehicular miles traveled, or VMT, and mobility solution or mobility choices is also the city's plan to address that state mandate. So both of these plans have come out of mandated goals, I guess you to say, that the city needs to hit. All right. So if you want to look them up, SB 375, SB 743, and then AB 1763, which is also called sometimes the CASA bill. So again, the state has mandated that we need to reduce vehicular miles traveled, provide more affordable housing, and also meet a housing goal in these next couple of years to build about 80,000 houses, I think, in the city, and then over 100,000 in the county. So the first is to achieve the climate goals. So the city is, so to reduce vehicular miles traveled, it's a pretty easy calculation. It's the number of trips taken multiplied by the length of the trip. So reducing either of those numbers would obviously then reduce the overall VMT. So the city has decided the best return on investing resources will be where more people are living. So denser areas where people can walk or bike to then access transit to stay out of their cars. And the housing solutions is kind of the same thing. They're again focusing on areas near transit, or as TPAs, the transit priority areas that we already have. So if you recall from our earlier discussions about transit priority areas, all of Ocean Beach is in a transit priority area, is a transit priority area. So all of this would affect us, and we would be one of the targeted neighborhoods. I don't really want to say it like that, but this would be a these would directly impact our communities, unlike some other. Okay, can I get a map or something? Sorry, this is all everything I've gone through. Okay, perfect. So here you can see a map of where things are for the mobility choices, where things are being targeted. So as you can see, all of Ocean Beach is blue. A lot of the coastal communities are blue. And so any developer who is developing in those blue areas would be required to provide mobility amenities, whether that would be paying for a bike lane, or, you know, what have you. They're required. So they can't pay an in-lieu of fee. The developers are required to provide these amenities to the areas you see in blue. All of the areas you see in yellow, the developers have a choice of either building travel amenities there or paying an in-lieu of fee, which would then go back into the communities in blue to pay for mobility programs there. Does that make sense to everyone? Can you see the different zones and everything? Okay. So we are, again, we're zone two, we're a transit priority area. So anyone with new development would be required to throw money either towards a mobility project, and then we'd also be receiving money from all the parts in yellow to build mobility projects. So these are some of the mobility projects that they would provide. Good thing they can think of these things when I can't. But it's not just bike lanes. As you can see, it's a whole host of other amenities that the developers will be able to provide, or will be encouraged to provide, mandated to provide. So yeah, this is more since there's a higher density of population, that's just how the city decided that it would be most effective to reduce our VMTs and hit our state targets. So these maps kind of illustrate that if you have, you know, a population of 40,000, then that many more people will be accessing these amenities. And then the thought would go that that would be a greater impact on reducing our vehicular miles traveled, as opposed to putting bike lanes where a little bit less people live and a little bit less people have access to those amenities. All So the communities of concern are highlighted by the city of extremely amenified, is that in there? They're the communities that don't really have a lot of mobility choices currently. So a lot of the funds that they would be paying in lieu of fees are going to be directed into these communities of concern, first and foremost. So you can see them outlined in the pink. So we aren't one of those. We have a few easy access to bike routes that I guess some more of our southern communities don't. So communities of concern would be the ones receiving a large chunk of those in lieu of fees. That's it. They only gave me the mobility choices. They didn't give me the housing solutions part of it. Okay. Then I will quickly go over housing solutions. So complete communities is another drive to get developers to build more affordable housing. The big ones that are the big kind of points that we should be aware of, hopefully you guys kind of all went through it, is that it would increase our SAR to 0.8. Right now it's 0.7. So for all those who aren't on the board, FAR is the percentage of land you're allowed to build on based on your lot size. So it would be up to 80%. And if it's a project, I do believe over 8 units, or so it's like that, you would be restricted to have at least 20% housing units be affordable. So they're upping the amount of percentage of housing units you need to make affordable in new developments in area in transit priority areas like ours. So I'll go back to that map actually, like ours, and then requiring that 20% of those units be affordable. I don't believe they can pay in lieu of fees as well. I think they just have to have it be affordable. Okay. How do I get back here? So does anyone have any questions for me before I start opening it up for comments?
This is Anthony. I have one.
Okay. All right.
You mentioned earlier about the transportation part of it, where developers were required to provide certain mobility elements in their development, not just pay a fee or fine. When you define developers, obviously in OB we have a lot of people that come across in front of us that are, you know, private single-family home developers. How would they comply with such a requirement? Like, they can't really physically build a bike lane. So how would they do that without paying a fee? How would they provide some kind of mobility element? Or be expected to?
0.8 far, Kevin. Sorry. The fee would be assessed, kind of like DIP funds are now, about how large it is.
Okay, so it would be a fee in lieu of a physical element that they're required to incorporate. Understood. Okay.
Yes, and it's earmarked for that community. So all these yellow communities we see, their fees are available to be utilized by the communities of concern and other communities in the blue.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not an 8 far. It's a 0.8.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at their website and it said 8.0, and I kind of had a cow. I mean, I literally like was freaking out and texting Kevin and going, is this really an 8.0? That's like,
Do you have any questions? Any other questions from anyone?
I have a question.
Yeah, Jane. Oh no, you've cut out. Try it. Jane. There you go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Doesn't the housing housing element do away with the planning board and make almost all projects ministerial?
Yes, so it would put a lot more projects into the ministerial bucket. However, a lot of reason things are processed too is because they have to get a coastal permit as well. So I would foresee a lot less of our projects in ours being ministerial since they're still required for that coastal development permit as well.
Well, and doesn't it violate the 30-foot height limit?
It does not. So that will still be in place. We can't, that can't be overturned without a vote from the public, without permission. So that's why the Midway district is talking about having a measure on the ballot to overturn their 30-foot height limit, but this plan did not immediately overturn our 30-foot height limit.
This is Nancy Kelly. I have a question.
Okay, Nancy.
So I'm just want to be clear. Anthony, I believe it was, said, you know, if a small project couldn't, you know, they couldn't do a bike lane, et cetera, so they would pay the fee, right?
They would pay the fee, but it would not be allowed to be taken out of the community. It would have to then go to Mobility Choices directly into our community.
Into OB. Yes. Okay. So the only ones that go to the red are the ones from the yellow. The yes. other ones go back to their own community.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted that clarification. Thank you.
Of course. Okay. Any other questions before I turn it over for comment? Is this map helpful? Should I keep it up? Otherwise, it's kind of a little bit harder for me to manage when I'm sharing my screen.
I got a question.
Go for it, Kevin.
Have you seen this FAR stated in the actual code sections of this? Because it's 100% clear to me that they're calling for an 8.0 FAR here and in Midway and in UTC and some other, areas that would welcome very high density, and then 4.0 in other places. Our 0.8 is actually very low. Our 0.7 is already well below what normally would be allowed in RM2-4. So that's a really big deal to that. The reason I raise that is because the only limit on unit density is based on the minimum size of a dwelling per the building code. That's 120 square feet. So if I can build 30 feet up on a lot, I could fit four stories on a lot, and I can build a whole lot of 120 square foot units on that. This is a big difference, 0.8 versus 8.0.
Yeah. The reason we are seeing ours increase to 0.8 is because that's what's happening in all multifamily zones. And since OB is zoned entirely multifamily, that's why our FAR is getting increased across the board, while communities like Pacific Beach aren't seeing that much of a jump in their FAR because they still have single-family zoning.
So the FAR currently in the RM24 is 1.2. So I'm a little baffled why someone would propose reducing that. I'd like to see something that shows a 0.8. Their documents very clearly show an 8.0. So.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I actually agree with Kevin that we should get this clarified, because if it ends up in writing, then it ends up in writing. So, I mean, they, on their website, they have 8.0 and 4.0. They don't have 0.8. And they need to change it. They either need to correct it or tell us that it's real, because it seems a little crazy.
Something we point out, obviously, this is an action item. What, and I was talking to Teddy a little bit about this, because like you said, Jen is still being briefed on it. This hasn't, it's gone through the Housing Commission, which has approved it with a vote of 5-2. And I do believe that it was also seen by the Housing Subcommittee, which also approved it. So it's just waiting to be moved forward to council right now. So Jen is still being briefed on it. I'm pulling it up. Okay. But we can go around. If no one has any more questions, we can go around and make comments. Like Teddy's still here, and like you said, they're listening and they want, you know, some. Is Teddy still? Yeah. They want advice on what to do for this, and they want specific advice, and it's not something like you said. You know, other regulations on housing are separate from this, and we really, the council members really looking for advice back on this specific legislation and pointing to specific things in it we either, you know, think are admirable or we think need to be taken a look at again. So I can open the floor up for comments if someone wants to start.
Hey, Andrea, I have one quick question. And then I do have comments, but I have a quick question. So in their proposal in requirement number one that they list online, they said that affordable units must be within a TPA in the same community planning area or within 1 mile of the proposed project. So does this mean that they can build a unit that's all non-affordable, but yet they can build the affordable units like within a mile of that one?
That sounds like what it would read.
So they would need to actually have two properties to be able to do this, and they could be completely separate. So they could put all their high rent district stuff together and all their lower rent district stuff together. So it just seems a little weird to me. I mean, if we're talking about inclusionary housing and we want people to, you know, be able to have all different economic variables living in the same area, then, you know, when you push the lower income properties away from the higher income properties, that goes against what we're really trying to do. So I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding that element. I thought it was a little odd. And then I had a question about the by right project approval, but I think that was covered. Because if they do the incentive number one that they talked about, the by right project approval with limited exceptions, does that mean that it bypasses the planning board? Because if it completely bypasses the planning board, then we won't have any control over the aesthetics or any suggestion of the aesthetics to the developers, and we might end up getting saddled with a whole bunch of stucco boxes with no character. So I really have reservations about that as well. Does that make sense? Is the by right project approval, is that what it means?
Are you looking at the draft right now?
Well, it's online. It's under incentive number one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and it just says it's the permit process under incentive number one, and it says by right project approval with limited exceptions. And then they give a couple of exceptions. And I looked up by right approval process, and it basically means that anything that fits within their scheme or their, you know, whatever they're approving means that it will just get a permit approval without anybody having to look at it. So
yes, the ministerial process, like the only real ones that we see by right in here, because it triggers the coastal permits, are remodels and ones that use the 50% rule.
But it sounds like what they want to do now is they want to grant by right approvals to all developers and not just remodels or whatever. So
yes, that's... but it's still from my just understanding of this, I think that it would still trigger a coastal act because we're still in the coastal overlay zone. This isn't doing anything to the coastal overlay zone, so any development that has to go through that process is still going to have to go through all the coastal processes.
Okay.
They can't really get rid of anything like that.
Okay.
No. Great. Okay. But it's certainly something to obviously bring up since our council member has a large majority of coastal things. Does anyone else have any comments?
Nope.
Anthony, I'm not sure if this is related to it, but I read an article in the Union Tribune today about closely related to this, and where they were talking, the city was talking about taking, there's so many, like X number of projects within the coastal zone or within our, for example, in the city of San Diego that can are potentially, they're going to be reserved for affordable housing, and that if those properties were allowed to be demolished and rebuilt with a new property, then those would be taken away forever. So my question or concern would be that the impact, the development impact fees for a lot of these projects are really high, which prohibits a lot of these developers from remodeling their properties, and it provides an incentive for them to remove, you know, basically to demolish them and start with a new property, and paying and then removing affordable housing. You know, they'll pay for they'll pay the fee to basically override that. So my question, I guess, would be that how does that conflict with what this proposal is doing, these laws? Because if the lever to develop a property with affordable housing is so prohibitively expensive that it disincentivizes developers from doing so, how it looks like as though they're in conflict with each other. That's basically what I'm saying. I'm not articulating it right, but I just wonder if they've considered that, if they considered other impact fees that would, rather than disincentivizing, but incentivizing folks to build affordable housing. That's my comment. I'm not sure if they've considered that or not, that the overall fees for that.
Is there a way you think the fees could be structured?
Well, I would think that if they reduce some of those fees, that it would provide an incentive for homeowners to create affordable housing. Rather, right now the incentive, because the fees are so high, the incentive would be then to create properties that are unaffordable. You know, basically, create luxury apartments and short-term rentals, and because the fees are so high. So it seems like as though there's a conflict there. There's one side of the mouth that's saying we want to do inclusionary affordable housing, but they're not reducing the fees to allow individual homeowners to do that. And that's where I see the conflict there, is there's a barrier of entrance to do such a thing of some of these older homes. Maybe I can articulate it better in an email. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess what you're saying is that there, if people with homes right now have no incentive to then make them into multifamily units, is that what you're saying? As much as developers with bigger projects do.
Exactly. So, you know, if we wanted to take if you wanted to create a duplex out of a single family home to increase density, to do so in Ocean Beach is historically very expensive to do, and the cost of doing such a thing would basically not allow them to even consider it because of that, because of the fees involved in such a thing. There's already, you know, high barrier to do such a thing. So that's why we see a lot of these redevelopment and remodels being turned into luxury homes. And like, again, to me, I see that as a conflict. And so I'm not sure if that these laws address that part of the equation.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. I know that the fees are now based on the square footage of your development as opposed to the number of units. So if you had more units, you were paying higher fees, but now they're leveling. This would level the DIF funds based on how big you're building, because they don't want to punish people who are building lots of, you know, studio apartments or single apartments or smaller units. So they want anyone who's, the DIF funds will be leveled based on how big you're building.
Understood. So it's based on square footage going forward.
Yes.
Okay.
I speak up and get close here? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you're not cutting out yet.
So Anthony was critical of the DIF fees and it being a burden to these developers. You know, those DIF fees pay for infrastructure, needed infrastructure. You know, this idea that can just everyone can build a second house in their backyard, not provide any parking or water or sewer, it's ridiculous. We need those. I don't think we should be discounting that. I did notice in this it has a in lieu fee for mobility, and that was based on square footage of the, I think it was of the whole lot actually, and which is a pretty substantial fee. So I'm concerned that's going to be a barrier to development. It's really adding another fee. I mean, the biggest fee I see that doesn't provide any value for a developer here is the coastal development fee, frankly. We have the world's largest homeowners association, and we have the luxury of paying $7,000 just to send a permit in to a major remodel or build a unit. So I, you know, if we want to talk about reducing fees, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why we're scrutinizing somebody's remodel work because we're in the coastal zone. We need to keep the DIF fees, and we need to stop giving away development without providing any necessary infrastructure. This can potentially provide a whole lot of density. It will effectively throw away all the efforts of Obetians for the past, I don't know, 50 years of planning, and turn us into a high density, I don't know if it'll be affordable, but it will completely transform OB for the worse, in my opinion. So if you love density, if you love 100 times, up to 100 times more density and no parking, then this is the plan for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. anyone else having comments about this? Any other questions? Any changes you want to see that we can send back to council? Jenna, your mic's on. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I will say something. So I would just say that I totally agree with Tracy about ensuring neighborhoods can remain mixed income and that developers can't just use this to push people out of certain neighborhoods by just moving them a mile away. And I think that requires an explicit commitment to preventing displacement as part of the housing element, because otherwise it's really easy to say, well, we built this low-income housing or this mixed-income housing, but not actually look at the people in the neighborhood where the developer is building and say, this is housing that will actually serve the people who currently live here and won't push them out. So I think there has to be an explicit commitment to preventing displacement in neighborhoods. And then I also just want to add something that's probably a little controversial, but I'm going to say it anyways, that I think that San Diego should ban all single-family zoning throughout the city. Banning single-family zoning doesn't mean you can't build single-family homes. It means you're allowed to build multifamily buildings in a single-family predominant neighborhood. So to me, it seems completely at odds with our ability to solve our housing affordability crisis if we are saying there are entire swaths of the neighborhood or of the city that can't have anything but single family homes. So I would love to see San Diego take a stand on that. Minneapolis has actually banned single family zoning throughout the city, and other cities are looking to follow suit, and I think that it's a good step.
Thank you, Jenna. Yeah, and that was my biggest criticism of this whole thing is that, you know, we have some communities with community plans that haven't been updated in 20 years. So that's why we see that. And they spend a lot of time and effort of the planning department coming up with this legislation when I think they could have updated community plans to work on getting more multifamily or just more, and they want more mixed-use commercial. And all of that has, you know, should come, in my opinion, through a community plan update. That's why we have the City of Villages, so that community members actually have more of a voice in what their communities are looks like and develops like. So I really wish I would have seen the city, you know, go through and actually help some of these people update their plans. Ours was updated in 2012, and that's, you know, that's why we have multifamily housing throughout everything. So I think this is misdirection of resources, but there you go.
May I just say something as
a... Go ahead.
I have worked in climate for several years, and I just want to respond to, wanting density or loving density. I've lived in Ocean Beach for 50 years. I love Ocean Beach the way it is. But I have grandchildren now, and I have learned and become aware of climate issues that I had no idea about even, 15 years ago. And the impacts of sprawl and transportation and remote locations, et cetera, on our climate. And the fact is, we have to figure out a way to get our climate in control. And if we can't keep people out of the city, and people have to be able to live here and afford it, we are all going to have to compromise and give things up and change our mindset. I fought so hard for, the FAR and all the other aspects of OB that we've tried to maintain. But we have to recognize the climate issue and our future, the future for our children and grandchildren.
Awesome. So anyone else?
Quick, kind of just statement too. I think we've identified a couple flaws or issues with the plan as it stands. Obviously, the big one is what is the FAR, and if in fact it's as much of an increase as Kevin and Tracy pointed out, I think we've got an issue. I personally understand the need for increased housing. We're already at a pretty high density in Ocean Beach, and I think just doing a blanket approach like this without, as Andrea said, consulting these independent community planning organizations, especially if, as Tracy pointed out, this would give authority to not even consult us if this is approved, those are two fatal flaws in it for me right now.
Thank you. Okay. George? Did you want to say something? I saw your... No. Okay, just raising. Okay, great. Do we have any further comments, or do we have... Nicole? Oh, Nicole wants to make a comment. Jane? Okay. Nicole, if you want to go first, and then Jane, I think. Nicole? Sorry. You should begin now, Nicole.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, and then I'll get...
All right. Thank you, and I appreciate just the couple minutes. SB, as you know, when you first started, SB 743 is a state law to reduce VMTs. So all the cities, they actually did this in 2012, 2013, and they've had 10 years or 8 years to figure out how to accommodate this. So all the cities are in a crunch time right now, and the county is actually doing some guidelines as well. So just to keep your eyes and ears heads up, if anybody wants to... talk more about this, please get me offline, because our supervisors, our five supervisors in the county, are going to make some decisions in the next couple weeks about how the county foresees this, and their guidelines, they're not approving the correct guidelines to prevent urban sprawl, and so that's what this is really about, is creating more infill development and keeping away the urban sprawl, and so really about keeping our land out in the eastern area and northern area, undeveloped, and having people be able to walk and bike and to use the transit to get to their jobs. And so the maps that you see are really designated to show where we can infill appropriately. If you are interested in writing to your supervisors, I think it's critical that we actually voice our concerns to the county as well. And so hit me up if you want any more information on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Jane, did you want to say something?
Yes, I did. My concern is that it almost eliminates involvement of people, because with ministerial review, we never see the projects.
Yeah.
And they, in the infrastructure now, they explicitly state that they are eliminating community planning groups.
In what part of Complete Communities?
It's in the infrastructure now.
Okay.
That they have a then and now, and we have community planning areas, and then when everything is done, we don't have them.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. I know things have been held up with the CPG reforms for a while, but that's, you know, all of those things are still lingering out there. And, you know, we are expected to see some changes, I think, once COVID settles down and everything gets a little bit back to normal and there's not a million fires, new fires every day to put out. And we, yeah. But that's a good point. And then I do have a comment from Virginia. Bring transit to the people instead of crowding them with the scope of our inadequate transit system. Thanks, Virginia. A lot like what Kevin was saying, we just don't have, yeah. Does anyone, so with that, we're kind of, you know, running a little bit over.
Andrea. Can I make a quick comment, Andrea?
Yeah.
I was just happy to see that there was no in lieu of fees for the affordable units. That's no longer an option, but I'm questioning why we'd be incentivizing building affordable units on a separate location, kind of circling back to the question I think that Tracy asked.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason behind incentivizing those units at a separate location, sort of concentrated, as it were, away from the main project?
So as Tracy brought up, it does say within a mile of where the project is. So if that is something that we're all really concerned about, I would encourage to put it into the motion and give that feedback to Jen. I know, because that is one of the strengths of the Ocean Beach community, is that we have a great mixture of people across all incomes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it does sound like that is definitely important, something we should take back. Do we have a motion? Yes, Tracy.
No, I don't have a motion. Are we done with the discussion? Because I have one more final statement.
No, go for it. I mean, we can. We'll.
Okay.
Discussion. Just so, until someone makes a motion, we can keep discussing.
Okay. So. You know, I think it's wonderful and great that the city is actually looking to build more housing. We definitely need more housing, but we need to think about like this big giant elephant in the room, that this plan doesn't even look at STVRs. Like, nothing in the housing inventory report reports how many STVRs there are and how many units are actually being flipped to STVRs, right? So until the city decides to take a look at how many of our units are being utilized for STVRs, I don't even think it's fair that they look at how many rental units we need, because, you know, the minute these developers build anything, they're going to be flipped over to STVRs, right? So there needs to, the STVRs need to be looked at. They need to be quantified. They need to be quantified so that they can license them, tax them, you know, make them pay fees for what they're doing, make sure that they pay into the TOT taxes. You know, if they're going to be utilizing our housing stock for, you know, hotels and motels, they need to kick in the same amount that the hotels and motels are doing too. But, you know, aside from that, if everybody is building these giant, you know, duplexes or, you know, complexes for people to live in, and within, you know, 30 days of them selling the property, they're being flipped to STVRs, it's not going to matter that they built these properties, right? So something that I kept thinking about was something that Dan kept bringing up all last year about deed restrictions. So there are many, many cities now that are actually putting deed restrictions on development so that there's a limited amount of time or a certain amount of time that people have to actually live in the unit or not rent it STVR. You know, we can say, like, we can ask, we can say, hey, a 5-year deed restriction on flipping it to an STVR, you know, 5-year deed restriction, you have to live in your house that you purchased for 5 years. I mean, there's always like this possibility that Dan has mentioned. And I don't know why it never really went anywhere. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, we live in a capitalist society and people should be able to do what they want with their own property, right? But because we're looking at such a severe situation here, that the minute something is sold and somebody buys it, it gets flipped into a short-term rental, we really need to think about ways to prevent that. And unless the housing element starts to consider the short-term rental issue that we have here, I don't even think that it's of value to even talk about developing more properties, because we know what's going to happen. So that's my statement. I got really annoyed. And, you know, we're offering these development or these developers ease of permitting, financial incentives to build more housing for our growing population. We should also be asking for something in return. So deed restrictions, you know, because we need to accommodate what the city is calling very low and moderate income housing needs. And if we don't do something, they're definitely going to take advantage and we're going to lose all of our low income housing. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought it up. It's actually, so if you buy a house that has been covenanted or restricted for low income housing, so if you buy a house that was previously used as, you know, Section 8 housing, it is protected in the city code. It has to be used as such for X amount of years after you buy it. It's something one of our short-term vacation rental subcommittee, ad hoc committee people pointed out to us. You know, that could also be a code update question. Is it possible to restrict housing that's being used as residential housing and not transient occupancy housing once it's been bought in the similar way that low-income housing is protected once through sale, after sale?
And I mean, I'm not asking that they do that to every single property, but they need to find a way to protect that low-income property that they're requiring, that only 10% that they're requiring that the developers build, which, by the way, I think should be 20%, but, you know, that's just me. But there needs to be a way to make sure that those places don't get flipped quickly, and we need to accommodate our low-income and mid-income residents.
And this is Chris, just throw in, you're absolutely right. They have required that for junior ADUs. That's a now 5-year requirement for ADUs, not junior ADUs. Yeah, so I see no reason why for low income housing we couldn't request that. I mean, it makes sense to me.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, so like I said, we're getting. Does anyone have any more comments? I think we've discussed this. I think we can make a good motion out of this and get those. Our comments to the council member before she has another briefing on it today or tomorrow, so she can have those in her heads and maybe, you know, ask some of these questions for us.
Are you still taking public comment? I'm so sorry to keep intruding. It's Nancy.
If you have another quick comment, I am calling for a motion if someone can put one together.
Okay, just so quick, I just wanted to really emphasize what the other two said about not separating out the mix of housing, you know, that the mile away thing. So that I just wanted to reinforce that for myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Does someone have a motion?
I'm trying to type something out here.
Yeah, I'm trying to like put one together.
Let me give it a shot.
Go for it.
Over audio and see if we have a little bit of support here. If you guys can throw via way. I moved to... I moved that the Ocean Beach Planning Board voices its strong opposition to the 12 times increase in FAR and greater increase in unit density to our neighborhood, which will completely transform our neighborhood and throw it to wolves to the developers. And this goes against everything that the Ocean Beach community and planners have fought for the past 50 plus years. That's my motion.
The wolves part two? Okay.
Yes, with the wolves. Because, you know, 85% of you are just renters. I call you temporary residents because you are one developer away from being a former Ovechkin. And I cry when I see this sort of state-down mandates that's going to transform our neighborhood.
But yeah, well, I think also we need to include in the motion about the inclusionary housing and that all affordable units mandated must be included in the same project. That sounds like it's important too.
That's a friendly amendment.
Also, I thought we had discussed that the coastal zones aren't subject to the same if they are.
The coastal zone is...
We're in a TPA, transit priority. So
we still have the 30-foot height limit is still in effect for this, but the FAR is subject to this proposal. It's very clear to me that it's 8.0. That's a huge distinction.
It's huge. So, Andrea, is your inclusionary housing going to be a friendly amendment?
Yes.
And then I would like to make a friendly amendment to that, that the city evaluates the short-term rental stock that we currently have and determines, and I don't even know how to phrase that, but they need to include the short-term housing in their, in their inventory, so that we can evaluate how many properties are being utilized by short-term rentals. I don't know. Do you think that's even worth it?
I feel like we're splitting hairs on this stuff. I mean, the FAR and the unit density is so bad. And so, even if you don't think it's bad, it's so big of a deal that I feel like these other points are just distracting from that.
Well, I think that the giant FAR and the inclusionary housing are two of the most like poignant things that we really need to hit home on, because both of those would just be horrible for our neighborhood. I think that, you know, we can pound them as much as we want about the STVRs when they start actually looking at STVRs legislation again. So maybe I will withdraw my friendly amendment. So far, we have Ocean Beach Planning Board voices its strong opposition to the increase of FAR and greater increase in our neighborhood with a friendly amendment that inclusionary housing must have all units must be
developed on site.
Must be.
Let's go with that, nice and concise.
Okay, wait. Inclusionary housing must be built on the same development project. How's that? Site. Okay. Okay.
So I tried to throw it. I don't want to wait. Real quick, I could tip out what I had said. If you guys want to look in the chat box, minus anything anyone else has suggested to add to that.
Do we have a suggestion for what the FAR can be increased to, or are we just saying no?
I mean, it's like we're negotiating with terrorists here. It's so far apart. Where do you start?
I think it should be standardized. That's what we should ask for, because then maybe it'll we can get them back down to what PB is seeing, a standardized FAR across the beach communities, so not one of them becomes more dense than the other.
Hey, Kevin, if you want me to include that Wolves developer stuff, go ahead and copy that into an email and send that to me.
I put it in the chat box. I do like some of the suggestions. I would say regarding Andrea's proposed amendment that I don't like it, but if you guys want to add that, maybe we can vote on her amendment, my motion, before voting on my motion, and then go take out the Roberts Rules book a little bit on that. What do you think about that, Andrea? Because I don't...
So you wouldn't accept... So you don't want to accept the friendly amendment. You want it to be voted on separately. So just...
I wouldn't support your amendment as a friendly amendment. So if you want to do a vote to include that or not, then that's the choice.
Right.
And I would oppose.
Well, then I think it would be, we would vote on your motion without the amendment, and then we'd vote on the motion with the amendment. It'd be two separate votes like that.
I mean, I think we're supposed to, can we vote on whether or not to amend the motion before voting on the motion? Does that make sense? I feel like if we vote on my motion, then what's the point of voting on other stuff after that? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's how it's supposed to happen.
I'm actually not understanding why.
To be clear, if you can vote to amend my motion, that doesn't mean you're actually supporting Andre's amendment. It just means you want to see that go up to a vote rather than what I... That makes sense to everybody. So a vote to amend the motion is not a vote to support the motion. Does that make sense?
No.
Yes. One second. I just Googled it.
And Tracy withdrew her motion. I kind of like it, but I just think that FAR is such a massive, massive, massive thing that I hate to dilute it. You know my position on STVRs, but FAR is, it's just such a big deal.
All right. It says... A proposed amendment is treated like any, like many other motions, that it can be debated and voted on. It can be done even in the case of a friendly amendment. So I think, so from my reading, and then it says an amendment could pass with a majority vote regardless of the vote required to pass the main motion. So I think we have to vote on your motion first and then vote on the amendment, from my reading of that.
I disagree with that.
I think we vote on the amendment first and then the motion.
I don't want to criticize you, Andrea, because city council has screwed this up as well. So,
no, I'm just reading straight from the Wikipedia page for Robert's Rules. That's
But the U.S. Congress uses Robert Rules, and they vote on amendments first and then the final bill.
What I'm saying is that, they should be voted on separately. I don't think the order matters. Do we have a second for any of these, though?
I have a question.
I second voting on the amendment.
Thank you, Janet. So then, is there any more debate on the amendment? Again, to be clear, the amendment is all inclusionary housing has to be developed on site. That's the amendment. Any debate? So we have a first from me, second from Jenna. Does everyone have their camera on? No. All right, Tracy, can you take roll call and do it that way?
Sure. This is for the amendment. Okay. Anthony.
I vote for Andrea's amendment.
Andrea, I'm assuming you're going to vote yes. Andrew.
I vote against.
Chris.
I vote yes, but I also wanted to tack on a friendly amendment, but I guess I'll wait for the next round.
Derek is still not here, correct? George.
Yes, correct.
George.
Yes.
Jane. Anybody see Jane?
I did. I think she was giving a thumbs up, but it was too close to the camera. I couldn't tell which way it was going.
Okay. Jenna.
Yes.
Kevin.
I oppose the amendment.
Nicole.
Yes.
Newman.
Yay.
Richard's still not here. I vote yes. Virginia.
I would support that as a separate recommendation, but it doesn't look right. I say no as an amendment to this one.
So you're saying no then?
No.
Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 yeses. So the amendment.
Nicole, you didn't ask her.
No, I did.
Nicole, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The amendment passes. The amendment passes. Okay. And now.
Either Chris, you can make a motion to add an amendment, or someone can second Kevin's motion. So, I would like to motion to add an amendment.
So we're motioning now to add that amendment to his motion?
I want to add another amendment.
Another one?
Yeah.
Wait, I get to go first.
Okay, yeah, you should go first.
I don't know. You know, maybe we're all saying the same thing, and I know this is at the distaste of Kevin. I actually think it does further reinforce all the flaws in this if we, you know, stack a few of our objections in. And so the only thing that I wanted to add was explicitly calling out that the planning organizations like our board should be consulted for any of these developments within the districts. So that's my amendment.
Second that amendment.
Oh, sorry.
Jenna, so making sure that the ministerial, that these aren't right away.
Yeah, I think the term was by right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Doing away with that language.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jenna, you second? Okay. Will you roll call the vote again, Tracy?
Sure. Okay. Anthony.
Yes to Chris.
Andrea.
Yes. I don't think. I know other people are pissed about it.
Andrew.
You say yes?
Yes.
Chris, I'm assuming you're going to say yes.
Yes, and I'll throw in some animals if it makes Kevin happy, too.
George.
Yes.
Jane. I can't see you, Jane.
She's too close.
Yes. She said yes.
Thank you. Jenna. Yes. Kevin.
Yes to Chris's amendment.
Nicole.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
I say yes. Virginia. Can't hear you. There we go.
Sorry, my mouse isn't working either. I mean, my...
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
If we're going to do that, yes.
Yes to the amendment.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Motion passes. 12. There's no no's. No no's. Okay. Next.
I would like to offer a friendly amendment. Yeah. Go ahead, Jenna. I actually really liked Andrea's suggestion of seeking to standardize the FAR across the beach communities. I think the FAR should be increased, but it should be standardized, and it should be something that's a reasonable FAR in consultation with planning boards. So that would be my amendment.
So is that friendly?
Would you accept that as your call for FAR, Kevin, or?
No, we can
we can certainly vote on it.
Yeah.
I would not support that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. So you move to have an increased FAR but standardized across beach communities. Awesome. Okay, great. Do we have a second for that motion?
I'll second, George.
Thank you, George. Okay, let's call the roll.
Okay, Anthony.
I say yes to Jenna's friendly amendment.
It's Jenna's amendment.
Yeah, Jenna's.
All right.
Andrea.
I will vote yes. I want a standardized FAR, and I don't think we're getting out of this without a higher FAR, so it's fine.
Andrew.
I would vote against it.
Christopher.
Yeah, I have to say no to.
George.
Yes.
Jane. Somebody tell me what she's doing.
No. Very.
Okay.
No.
Jenna.
Yes.
Kevin.
No.
Nicole.
I vote no as well.
Thank you, Nicole.
Newman.
I vote yes.
Thank you, Newman.
I'm voting no. Virginia.
We already voted on our FAR.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 5 yeses and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 noes. So that motion or that friendly amendment does not pass.
Do we have a second on Kevin's motion if there are no more amendments to be passed?
I'll second Kevin's motion.
Can I just repeat it really quick so that everybody knows what they're voting on?
It's also in the chat box.
Okay, Ocean Beach Planning Board voices its strong opposition to the increase of FAR by 10 times and unit density by even more that will completely transform our community and throw it to the wolves, parentheses, developers.
There was language in there about, and undo the work of Obetians and planners, local planners for the past 50 years.
Okay, well, I didn't get that. Was that in a separate note?
That was all part of it. I didn't get that in the first part of the chat. I get it. It's a little bit of hyperbole, but...
Yeah, for sure.
That was definitely part of the motion.
Okay, can you read it slowly to me then so I can retype it?
What I
think it's just at the end, he wants to add and undo the work of Obetians and planners of the past 50 years.
Undo the work of OB planners that has been done over the past 50 years. Gotcha. Okay. I will second his motion.
Does that replace the votes?
It includes now the amendment... From which amendment passed? There was one amendment on there that passed.
The inclusionary housing and removing the by rights. Like I said, okay. I mean, Anthony, I think, seconded it, but if Anthony doesn't want to second it, I'll second it.
Yeah, well, the amendment's already passed, so the amendments can pass without the first motion passing. So we're just voting on this motion.
And I'll second Kevin's motion as it was appended with the that last sentence.
Okay. All right. Ready for vote?
Yep.
Anthony.
Yes.
Andrea.
Yes.
Andrew.
My son and I both vote resoundingly to support this.
Chris. Chris?
Yes.
Yes, okay. George?
Yes.
Jane?
She said yes.
Thank you. Jenna?
Absolutely not.
Kevin. Of course, yes. Of course you're going to support your own motion. Nicole.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
I vote yes. And Virginia. I still can't hear you. Thumbs up. Thank you. All right. That one passes also. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 to 1. All right.
Fantastic. Let's move. Okay, I'm going to close this because we're running long. And we still have that Alvarado presentation, but they said it wouldn't take that long. Unlike Brian, who said he would take 5 minutes. Okay, so annual report. George and Tracy sent me some corrections today by email. Is there anything glaringly wrong with it that anyone wants to correct, or can I get a motion to approve that so we can send it in?
I'll make a motion to approve with the edits.
Okay.
I second.
Thank you. Let's vote.
Vote. All right. Anthony.
Yes.
Andrea.
Yes.
Andrew.
Yes.
Chris.
Yes.
George.
Yes.
Jane. Somebody's partying. Somebody's got to turn off their volume. George.
Yes.
Thank you. Jane. Somebody tell me.
Yes.
Thank you. Jenna. I think I saw her mouth yes. Kevin.
Yes.
Nicole.
Being a new member to the board, I believe I'll have to abstain from this.
Because you were just selected? Yes.
That makes sense. Newman.
Yes.
Richard's not here. I vote yes. Virginia. Thumbs up. Thumbs down. Thumbs up. All right. Gotcha.
Yes.
Passes. We're good. Moving on.
All right, wonderful. We have, some long time, I don't think Rick's here, but Nicole is, and they were previously on our transportation committee. They missed the meeting where we nominated everyone, and I didn't hear back from them about whether they wanted to be on the committee, but they did show up at our last committee meeting and ask to be appointed. So would anyone object to having them? They've been on the committee since we founded it 2 years ago. Kevin?
I don't object, but I would like to hear if they're present, give us a little spiel on why we should want you.
Sure. Nicole's here. So, Nicole? She was. Nicole, you still there?
How about now?
Yes.
Now I'm here. And look, there I am on the video. All right, so most of you guys know me. So I have been on, this is the Transportation Committee. I said for a minute. And so, I just got off a meeting with the City of San Diego on their Mobility Board. So I actually represent the District 5 Mobility Board. And so I try to find out information and keep everybody in OB on the right page and try to create safer streets for everyone. And so how do we go about that process and communicate that to the city? So I also sit on the Peninsula Planning Board Transportation Committee as we are integrated and part of one, and when it comes to transportation. And I have been trying to be vocal and trying to get Midway to establish a transportation subcommittee, because I think our transportation goes all the way through there. So I thank you for the support. I did talk to Rick. He has been a great voice for our community. He is not here. I don't believe he's on this call. But he's been very vocal and done some great stuff to try to get better facilities and safer streets.
Yeah, and
I have a question if I could.
Yeah.
Does Rick, where does he live? You don't have to give me an address.
Rick lives on Cape May and Bacon.
Okay.
And I live in the peninsula area. But I live on Awful Tear, and I have another little place on the cliffs, so.
I'd like to actually make a statement that there are quite a few things that the Transportation Committee has had questions about, or, you know, we're looking for extra projects that we could do or something that would benefit the community. And both Rick and Nicole have been extremely helpful in the committee, and I would 100% support adding them to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome.
I move that we reappoint Rick and Nicole to the Transportation Committee, subcommittee.
Thank you, Anthony. I'll second the motion. Okay.
Who's seconding? Kevin?
Sure.
Kevin, are you seconding?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
vote.
Can we just do it?
Does anybody oppose?
Yeah, that's what I have to do.
Nobody opposes. Motion passes. All right.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay, great. So now we are going, I think it's the Alvarado Pipeline people. Thank you guys so much. I'm so, so sorry. This is running a little bit long. But I'll go ahead and pull up your presentation, and then just let me know when to go through the slides.
Hi, Andrea. This is Sheila Bowes. Can you hear me?
I can.
Good.
Can everyone see the presentation?
Yep.
Awesome. All right.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Sheila Bowes. I am a senior civil engineer with the city's Public Works Department. Thank you for allowing us to put this agenda item before you tonight. I can see you're really busy. We'd like to get you some information about the upcoming project and the construction impacts to you. I am online with Jericho Gallardo. I am online with Jericho Gallardo. He's the city's project manager. He will also be providing some of this information. Also online are Steve Lindsay, senior construction engineer with the city's field engineering division. His staff will oversee the construction of this project. Sarah King, she is the consultant from Kennedy Jenks. She is overseeing the design. And Megan Drummy, she is our outreach consultant from Katz & Associates. She is working right now on initial coordination with stakeholders, and she will continue to be a part of the project during construction. All of us will be available for your questions. Background and need. This project is for the city's public utilities department, which provides reliable water service for 1.4 million residents. This requires an extensive infrastructure system. The scope for this project both expands the system and replaces aging portions. Approximately 10 miles of water main will be constructed, primarily to install a new transmission main, which completes the transmission network through Mission Valley and allows for treated water from the Alvarado Treatment Plant to reach the coastal communities. Additionally, along the same alignment, some aging distribution main will also be replaced. This will be determined based on age and condition of that existing pipeline. May I go to the next slide? Here's some information about the overall scope of the project. The new transmission main will begin at Friars Road at the Interstate 805, where it connects to two other transmission mains, the Kearney Mesa pipeline and the Alvarado second. It will go westward along Friars and SeaWorld Drive, where it meets the Pacific Beach Pipeline at West Mission Bay Drive. It also connects to the Marina Pipeline at Friars and Napa Street. There also is some proposed replacement of distribution. As I mentioned, this is along Friars Road between Frazee and Mission Center, Friars Road between Napa and all the way down to Fashion Valley Road, turning south on Fashion Valley Road to Riverwalk Drive, which is the entrance, that side entrance to the golf course and the mall, and along SeaWorld Drive from West Mission Bay to the Interstate 5. On the next slide. This is the entire project area. I don't know on your laptops if you're all able to see it. I think I can see it and read the font. Starting from east to west, the pipeline replacement is along Friars. As I mentioned, it starts at the Interstate 805, goes all the way down to Friars Road, and then goes down south on, to Frazee, south to Hazard Center Drive. There's a tunneled crossing under the 163. The pipeline will then go on the south side of Fashion Valley Mall along Riverwalk Drive, which is a city street, where it meets Fashion Valley Road and then heads north up to Friars, continues all the way out to SeaWorld Drive, where it goes in both directions, both north to the approach to the Interstate 5 and all the way out to West Mission Bay Drive at the terminus. And that's about 10 miles of new pipeline. The next slide. What you can expect. Well, as this project is on very heavily traveled city streets, both SeaWorld Drive and Friars Road primarily, and other streets within Mission Valley, the project team has spent quite a bit of time coordinating the traffic control design. And so it is anticipated that there will be no street closures, only shifting of cars onto adjacent traveled lanes during construction. So no detours requiring cars to travel on alternate routes around construction are anticipated at this time. Also, all work when possible will be performed at night. This is not possible where the project is in residential areas. I'll show that on a slide later. Night work is typically between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. And the day work is expected to be between 7 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Nice. The traffic control plan is being developed, and it will also address impacts to the bike paths and sidewalks for pedestrians and bicyclists, and access to businesses and residences will be maintained during construction. Can we go to the next slide? And this shows the residential areas within the alignment in yellow. There's a lot of condominium housing along that yellow area. So that's the area that's anticipated for day work, and all of the areas in blue are anticipated for night work construction.
Excellent.
That's it. Project benefits. This project will expand the city's transmission network and allow for efficient distribution of water to the coastal communities. It will also replace some of the aging distribution pipeline. The scope of work will also provide for the installation of upgraded pedestrian curb ramps
and street resurfacing. And so for the remainder of the slides, Jericho will, my colleague will walk you through those.
Good evening. Can everyone hear me? Yes, awesome. Okay. So first off, good evening to the Ocean Beach Planning Board, and thank you, Sheila, for starting this presentation off. My name is Jericho Gallardo from the City of San Diego Public Works Department. I am the City Design Project Manager for Alvarado Second Pipeline, and I will continue the rest of this presentation. On the next few slides, I'll be going over the scope of work for Alvarado Second Pipeline. Though Sheila did provide some information, we'll get a little bit more into the detail here. So here we go. Sewell Drive from West Mission Bay Drive to Interstate 5. So up on the screen is an area of interest for the Ocean Beach Planning Board. We have specified night work along Sewell Drive from 8 to 6 a.m. We will be installing a 12-inch distribution main up to Interstate 5 and a 24-inch transmission main up to Friars Road. Pipeline installation will be on the south side of Sewell Drive. I would like to acknowledge that we understand that Sewell Drive is a main thoroughfare for residents to get into and out from Ocean Beach. We want to assure you that the work along Sewell Drive will be well coordinated. Though the work will be done at night, one lane closure will ensure that the residents will be able to drive in and out of Sewell Drive. Next slide, please. So we have Friars Road from Sewell Drive to Napa Street. We will be installing a 24-inch transmission main. Pipeline, again, will be on the south side of Friars Road. We will indicate night work from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. with two-way traffic maintained. The bike lane will also be detoured away from construction areas, and access to homes and businesses will be maintained. Next slide, please. To continue on the scope here, we are on Friars Road from Napa Street to Fashion Valley Road. Again, we will be installing the 48-inch transmission main and the 16-inch distribution main. Pipeline will again be on the south side of Friars Road. Night work is indicated from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. east of Mission Valley YMCA. We will have day work from 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. between the Mission Valley YMCA and Fashion Valley Road. Two-way traffic will be maintained and access to homes and businesses will be maintained. Next slide, please. Fashion Valley Road, Riverwalk Drive, Hazard Center Drive, and Frazee Road. Again, we will continue with the 48-inch and 16-inch main installation here on Fashion Valley Road. Night work is indicated from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. on Fashion Valley Road, Riverwalk Drive, and Frazee Road. We will continue with day work from 7 a.m. to 3:30 on Hazard Center Drive from State Route 163 to Frazee Road. Again, two-way traffic will be maintained. We will be coordinating a lot of this work with the Fashion Valley Mall and Hazard Center. Access to the MTS trolley station will be maintained, as well as access to homes and the businesses. Next slide, please. And the last part of this project, Friars Road from Frazee Road to Interstate 805. Again, we will continue the installation of the 48-inch transmission main as well as a 16-inch distribution main from Frazee Road to east of Mission Center Road. This time, the pipeline will be on the north side of Friars Road. We do indicate night work to be from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. One-way eastbound traffic will be maintained, and the on- and off-ramps will be closed for westbound traffic and access maintained for businesses and Civita community. Next slide, please. So project and community coordination. The Alvarado Second Pipeline project currently has CATS and associates to help with the outreach efforts for this project. We have been reaching out to the other community planning groups that will be impacted by this project. We are committed to keeping the community informed during the design and construction phase. Communication will be through different media outlets such as mailouts, web page updates, email blasts to the community chairs for distribution, as well as in-person meetings if option to. We are also in close communication with other city and agency teams for scheduling and streamlining the construction work. Next slide, so project status. Design is currently underway, final design to be completed in the fall of 2020. Contractor selection and construction start estimated to begin in mid-2021 with an estimated construction completion in 2024. Next slide, please. So for any questions regarding this project, please use the email address you see here, alvarado2@sandiego.gov. You can also call the number listed here or visit our project webpage. So just to give you a recap of our project team, Sheila Bose is the design senior engineer, and myself, Jericho Gallardo, the project manager, Steve Lindsay, senior construction engineer, Sarah King from Kennedy Jenks Consultants, and Megan Trummy from Katz and Associates. This concludes our presentation. I would like to open up the floor to any questions that you may have for me or for anyone else on our team.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, does anyone have any questions? Nope. Good.
Andrew? Ooh. I think I saw a raised hand.
Oh, Andrew?
Just two quick questions, they're not critiques, but just things I've heard come up in other past projects as we reviewed a gas main in, I don't know, Midway and another water main in our neighborhood. As you go through the project, are you coordinating with other municipalities or other major projects? So if you're digging up a road that, you know, the road then is being, you know, relayed in tandem with other projects so that there's minimal impacts to the community. It's just one note. And I'm going to guess you are, but just want to make sure I ask that question. And also, while I'm not a materials expert, I just want to ask the question. This came up with another water project in our neighborhood. Can you confirm you're using the highest grade materials to both minimize or eliminate any leaching of chemicals as water goes from one area to another area, so it doesn't release, cancer-causing agents or other things like that, that even if there's a minimal risk, are you using the highest quality stuff? And then also to minimize against issues since we're in, you know, potential fault areas or leaching areas near the river basin.
Thank you, Andrew. Great questions.
Yeah, definitely good questions. This is Sheila. Can you hear me? Okay. On behalf of a response for coordinating with other projects, the city does have software that helps us. There are so many different city departments all trying to put out projects. The mayor is putting pressure on all of the different departments to put out paving miles, to put out pipeline replacement miles, and we work to coordinate with those other city projects using software that we can see where their projects are and they can see where we are. I'm sure your group is probably aware of those paving moratoriums that are then established, 3 years for slurry and 5 years for asphalt overlay. So that's another way that we're incentivized to coordinate because we get locked out of a project area once a project comes in. I will mention that it is difficult to coordinate with outside utilities and private entities. They can pull permits through the Development Services Department, and they don't necessarily get locked out by those paving moratoriums that city projects all have to acknowledge for themselves. And so sometimes there does appear to be a lack of coordination when, in fact, great efforts have been put forth by city staff to coordinate with our own jobs, of which there are many. So that is one aspect. The second part of your question was as far as using high quality materials for the pipeline so that materials or minerals or chemicals don't leach into our water. The Public Utilities Department very strictly monitors this pipelines. Primarily, the city uses PVC and smaller diameter. This is primarily a transmission main, and we will be using steel. A part of the design includes corrosion protection, which is, I think, part of the problem whenever you think of contaminated water and Flint, Michigan, and things like that. And the third part of your question was, I think you mentioned a fault, you know, that we're crossing a fault. And there is definitely has been a geotechnical study that was performed by our sub-consultant. And there will be areas that the design specifically is reinforced for that. I think Sarah Kennedy is on the call, or I'm sorry, Sarah King from Kennedy Jinks, and she might be able to speak to that a little bit more, but that is definitely an aspect that has been considered in the design. Sarah, is that something that you can add to? She might be having a little bit of problems with her microphone, but I do want to confirm that we do have a seismic recommendation, and there are areas within the alignment that there is proposed compaction grouting to stabilize the proposed pipeline.
I took you off mute, Sarah. You should be good.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Yes, I'll just echo what Sheila said, and that the alignment does cross Rose Canyon Fault Zone, and at the very beginning of the time, analysis, and also a seismic analysis, and we build that resiliency into our pipeline, both through special pipe fitting, and also mitigate settlement to the greatest of our ability through, you know, over-excavation, action with the trench, to build that resiliency into the pipeline for that site.
Thank you, Andrew. Are there any other questions?
I think Nicole Burgess. Nicole, you had a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, staff, for presenting this and giving us an update on this. These are important corridors, and I wanted to just reiterate that you are making pedestrian improvements, and I just wanted to ensure that you were working with city staff to do bicycle corridor treatments as prescribed in the community plans. And specifically, there is a class 4 cycle track all the way up to Fashion Valley, and the last block or two is a gap, and it's very dangerous if you're heading westbound, and just really want to ensure that you're working with the bike team at the City of San Diego to ensure this, with those connections.
Thank you, Nicole. Absolutely. There's a ton of bike lanes on Friars Road, kind of confusingly so, but don't worry if I'm confused by it, because we're working with Brian Genovese in the mobility section. And so as the plans are developed for traffic control, meaning impacts to the bicycles and the bike lanes during construction, he's taking a look at that. And we're not even preparing any of the final bike lane improvement sheets. Brian is. And so we're basically going to take our sheets from Brian and sandwich them on the water pipeline sheets for advertisement for construction. So even though I'm not speaking so competently to it, I assure you that we're coordinating very well with Brian and Esmeralda White of that bicycle section to make sure that they are contributing as appropriate for the bicycle plan.
Excellent. Great speaker. Thank you for confirming that.
Thank you. Anyone else with any other questions about water? Okay. Thank you guys so much for coming. And thanks for waiting till the end. I just usually put information items at the end. But thank you guys so much. Yeah, maybe you thought a little bit more about complete communities today and how it'll impact your neighborhood.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys so much.
We're signing off.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. I saw Anthony copy and paste their email into the chat, so if you want to save that, so if anything comes up and you want to make complaints, it's like Alvarado 2, or you want to compliment them, I'm sure they would appreciate emails like that. Let's go into, I have a treasurer's update, obviously Craig's not here. We have we have about a little we have a little bit over, I think we have $888, but we just got a confirmation that our refund from the city for everything we spent has gone through. They've seen it. So hopefully we'll be getting that money back and into our bank account, bump it back up over 1,000. So we're doing well. I shares updates. So CPC already saw the complete communities. It should be docketed for later in June. I will, of course, give everyone that information. So if you want to call in and make a public comment, I've done it a couple of times now for the city council meetings, and I love it so much more than actually going. Now that they figured out how to take live comments, it's a lot better than actually having to go down to City Hall and parking and all that nonsense. Sorry if Nicole drags me on a bike sometimes. But so it's good, and you can easily do it from home. So I would encourage anyone who just to kind of keep an eye on what's coming in front of city council now. And if you want to make a comment or anything, it's easy to call in. So those are my chair's announcements. I think Nicole requested to give an update. And is there anyone else who has any other announcements? Kevin? All right. So we'll do the executive board first, and then I'll get to you, Nicole. Great. Kevin?
I just wanted to say in 2 weeks, we are having our first project review committee meeting in a little bit. So if you're on that, you're open. Also, Anthony, I will get you those minutes for the short vacation rent ad hoc committee. So if any of you guys are interested in hearing the next one, check with Anthony.
Awesome. Yeah. Tracy?
Secretary report, I don't have anything, but I have something for arts and culture.
So. Oh, okay. Well, you have the floor, and then we'll go into call, I promise.
Oh, okay. So there's been a lot of really exciting things happening in the world of arts and culture. In March, there was an arts and culture challenge grant that awarded its first round of funding that totaled $250,000 to 32 San Diego nonprofit arts and culture groups. The grants ranged from $3,450 to like $10,000 per group, which was pretty remarkable. All of this money came from private donations. So right now they're actually taking more donations so that they can issue a second round of funding. So I just want to let people know that if they're interested in applying for funding, they can visit San Diego RAC, which is RACC.org, and look at the information for funding. In addition, the commission itself has issued two additional funding opportunities that are specifically for artists and not necessarily the nonprofits, but the artists themselves. One of them is called SD Practice, and it is a endowment of $500,000 that they're going to use to purchase private works of art from local San Diego artists. And these private local artists' work will be added to the civic art collection and displayed at places all over the city. And they're estimating that the range of purchase is going to be anywhere from $500 to $25,000. So they have a lot of money to throw towards some good civic art. So if anybody's interested in applying for that, the RFPs are going to be available through July 13th, and they can find more.
Removable art then, Tracy? So mural wouldn't fall under that?
You know what? I'm not sure about murals. There might be, you know, if there's a mural that could be moved to a certain location, maybe, you know, I mean, it's civic art, and a lot, you know, some of our civic art collection is murals and big sculptures and paintings and really wacky stuff, some of it. So, you know, it's really an awesome opportunity for artists. The second one actually kind of ties into the parks plan that we're looking at right now. Park Social is also a new initiative that the commission is going to be doing, and it is also $500,000. And what the city is going to do is they're going to contract 18 artists to create site-specific projects across the city's beaches, trails, parks, and neighborhoods. So what they're doing is they essentially want to hire, you know, 18 artists to create site-specific art. for our parks and playgrounds and, you know, beaches and stuff. So it's a pretty amazing opportunity. The funding for this was also private donations and some city money, like TOT funds, that were specifically earmarked for this kind of work. The RFP for that will be available probably in the summer, and it could also be located at sandiego.gov/arts-culture. So it's a lot of money floating around out there, all from donations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nicole?
That's great. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for the time, Andrea. Two things in Mobility Board. Heard tonight from Elise Lowe, which she's from DSE, and she is working on a temporary outdoor business operation permit, which is any business, retail, restaurant can actually go on to the website. There is a website and submit an application. And then the city staff will actually help direct into kind of what program. So they're having about three different programs where you can use the parking lots, you can use parking spaces to create a pedestrian plaza, often known as a parklet. They're waiving regulations, parking regulations, and streamlining a process so that businesses can open up their dining spaces into the street space and have better social distancing and allow these businesses to prosper. And to note, Little Italy is actually closing off India Street, three blocks, starting next week in the nighttime, 4 to 12 at night, closing off the entire street. And the restaurants are pulling their tables right into the middle of the street, creating a large pedestrian plaza. So this is very exciting, and just businesses in OB, you don't have to close off all of Newport, but you can look at that individual restaurant or digital business and say, hey, this is an opportunity here, and how can I make it happen for me? And that is going through June 23rd to City Council, so it'll be approved on that date.
Okay, thank you.
And then that was that one. And then just real quick on education, Rick did attend the Mission Bay Council meeting, and we are hoping that, Andrea, hopefully you can actually make a request to the Mission Bay to get the OB bike path on the agenda so that we can present, because otherwise they're not going to listen to us. So if you could just make a note to the chair to ask to be requested the OB planning board be on the agenda, then we can have some representation to be there next month. So those are the two things that I wanted to report on. So let me know if you have any questions.
I think we're good. Okay. I did have one more thing that slipped my mind. So when we heard the parks thing, I asked about, you know, the formation of our parks ad hoc committee and who we direct those to. And this, the parks committee said they'd be happy to have any of our suggestions for how to improve parks and just send them along to the parks master plan. So good. So our ad hoc team is ready to go, ready to make our parks nicer. But if no one, if we don't have anything else, you know, stay safe out there. I know most of you already boarded up. Yeah.
So just one other thing that we worked on as a coalition for Slow Streets is to reduce vape buttons so they have to push the button to get across the street. And the city actually did a couple in Ocean Beach. But if you, they have added it to the Get It Done app, that if you're walking along, they've added a category for vape buttons, and you can request that vape button anywhere in the city.
Okay.
To eliminate the vape button. That means you don't have to push the button. That pedestrian signal will always come on.
Rather than, that's very cool.
You're looking around, walking around, and notice one, you can report it on, get it done.
Perfect. Thank you, Nicole. Okay. Yeah, we're slipping down here, but we'll call it a night. I'm sorry it ran a little long. Like I said, that Brian guy told me he was going to take 5 minutes, and then he started going into the history of the forestry program, and I was like, dude, just tell us where the trees you're removing are. But yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you for bearing with us. I appreciate all of your comments. I thought our discussion about complete communities was really great, and I look forward to passing that around to our council member, and hopefully she'll listen. Tracy, if you can just email me those official motions, or just email them straight to Teddy and CC me, make sure we get it done. That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much, guys. And like I said, stay safe out there, whatever happens.